Let's go into trustee sales, page 175. I would say that it's probably the scariest thing that I hear in this business, where people say that that's where I'm going to start. I'm just going to go right to trustee sales and bring my cashier's check, and it's not their money. It's probably they're borrowing money from their mom's house on a credit line, and they're going to go buy a house because there's a $200,000 loan going to sale on an $800,000 house. And it's not a first, of course. It's a second. They don't know that they're supposed to check title, and they don't know that all these bad things can happen to them. So if you're beginning, it's not a safe place to start. Without the knowledge that you need, the odds that you'll lose money to trustee sale are pretty high. You're going to definitely need to have good contacts with a title company. We have a form that we'll go over where we fax every property that we chase. The title company gets that form and performs, in essence, a search on the property. Not a property profile, an actual prelim is the search that they need to do for us to understand what's owed on the property. It can be extremely profitable when you know what you're doing. And part of it is because the more knowledge it takes, the less people participate in it. The more money it takes, the less people are able to compete in it. The people at the trustee sales are declining. They probably have gone down by something like 75% in the last 6 months. So we're getting through the people that were buying and maybe servicing their own listing. There's people that were agents, they were buying and they were listing the properties and they were moving. There's one big buyer in Riverside that we basically have followed his last 34 purchases. He still has 28 of them for an average holding time of 8 months. That's somebody that has bought at too high a percentage and was being bailed out by an ever-increasing retail price. And all of a sudden, that game's ended. So now he's got a fair amount of monthly payments, or he's got all of his cash tied up and stuff that's not going to make him any money. So that's the transition phase that we're in right now. So even pretty big players got caught buying properties for too much at the trustee sale. Following them for the last 60 days, the average purchase is about 83-84% of value. Paying cash, literally sight unseen on the inside, not knowing if you're going to have to do an eviction. So it's not a very big margin that they're playing with. And I'm sure that that margin will change and gradually get bigger. If you're intending to do the trustee sale business and you have a job, the only way that'll work is if you have a very flexible job. I was doing it when I had a sales job in the electrical field, but that wasn't a real job, so it was okay. But you're always going to different locations for sales, and a high percentage of the time they get canceled at the last minute. So if you're trying to take a day off so you can go to a trustee sale, it'd be a complete waste of time in the long run. To be a full-time trustee sale buyer, I would say the minimum requirement at this point would be have $2 million in cash, where that would allow you to buy 3 to 5 properties at any one time. If you don't have it, you can get a partner. We get asked a lot, can we put up money at trustee sales for people? And the reason that doesn't work is that as a lender, we have to get title insurance. So I can't pre-loan anybody $500,000, have you go to the sale with a cashier's check, me not get a title policy, and also I'm sort of sticking my neck out that the title work was done by you correctly. So there's just no way to do it. We have worked with trustee sale buyers in the past. What they've done is bought the property and they come to us and they refinance it, so it stretches their money out. So if that's something that you're going to pursue, we'll definitely refi it very quickly, but it's not something we can go to the sale with. If you're going to follow trustee sales and foreclosures in general, it pays to stay on top of it all the time. And that's one of the disadvantages. If you have only a little bit of money to work with, you buy some property and then you're out of the business for 2 or 3 months while you're selling. You can miss a lot of opportunities, and then you have to kind of pick up from where you started. So it's really better, if you're going to do this, is to do it full time. You'll subscribe to a service in your area. The one that we have is County Records Research. Most notices of default property never make it to the trustee sale list, and this depends on the era. So in high foreclosure years like 96 and 97, over 50% of the notice of default ended up going to the courthouse steps. In low foreclosure years like 2004 and 5, less than 15% of the notice of the default ended up going to the courthouse steps. This chart at 14.1, to me, is a blueprint of what to do as a property buyer. In 2006, when we get done, the foreclosure numbers will probably be something around 8,000 to 10,000 trustee sales. Maybe a little bit more. But we've talked about this before. Once the direction change occurs, then the buying business has changed. Because now we're going to be in a market that it's going to be much harder to get increases in prices. When you buy subject to and you sell properties that are going to keep on going down for a few years, you'll end up having a lot of those people walk away because as a seller, you're able to get less and less of a down payment. And as a buyer with nothing at risk as far as their credit, if they get underwater, it's easier for them to walk away from the transaction. And so this foreclosure list, when it starts climbing the way it's going to climb, we should see a mountain that exceeds 70,000 trustee sales this time. That's a lot of people to chase around on a list. And so the MLS is going to be one of your favorite friends during the next cycle as lenders dump properties in there at wholesale prices starting day one more and more often. Number seven on page 176, many that make the trustee sale list have no equity in a down market. And when we checked on the NOD list, went through those 25, I think you can see that approaching the owner, 25 out of 25, they didn't have enough equity. And so all of those properties, if they make it through the process, don't get sold somehow or get brought current somehow, are going to go to trustee sale and they're going to revert to the lender. When you get your list, we already did this, you go through it and you eliminate all the properties that you're not going to be interested in. Top of page 177, and what remains should be properties with profit potential. And let's take a look at the form that we created on page 192. This is a form that we created so we could just fax this over. And it eliminates confusion over the phone as to what I want. We simply fill in the top portion, the sales date and time, the address, the trustor, if the owner's different, the legal description, the AP number, and the trust deed number, and the original amount. Why is it important that we get both the trustor and owner's name to be covered by the title policy? Because if it was borrowed originally by one person and transferred to another person, don't both of those people have an opportunity to maybe have other judgments or something that attach themselves to that house? So when we give this information to the title company, we've got to make sure that they check anybody that was in the chain of title is important. So that's why if there's different names that took title, we have to have them all included to find out what might be a problem with this property. When the title rep gets this, they fill out or check the box, this trust deed, and I'm talking about the one that's going to sale, they check if this is a first, a second, a third, or other. If there's back property taxes, they fill that out. If there are other deeds of trust, they fill that out. They also fill out if there's any personal judgments, IRS liens, state tax liens. And they answer these questions. Have all recorded owners signed trust deeds? Now, why would that be important? What if I was married and Marcia and I didn't agree on an investment? And I just snuck out on my own and borrowed money, and I borrowed $200,000, and the investment went bad, and the lender began foreclosure, and it went all the way to the sale. What, and they'll say no one bid at the sale, what would be owned by the lender at that point? They would own whatever I owned. They would now be in partnership with whoever owned anything other than me. Is that a good position to be in as a property buyer? No. And you know how I know that? I personally did that once. That is not very much fun. I was a co-owner with a wife of a guy who had borrowed money on a house. That's exactly how I know that how that works. And this guy was the most dangerous guy I had ever seen in my life. Just in his presence, you felt that this is the devil himself. And this was a home in Yucaipa. And after we negotiated to buy the wife's interest out, the mailman came by one day and said, "You bought the guy's house." He said he just blew himself up with a pipe bomb. He was on his motorcycle delivering a pipe bomb to somebody else and it blew up. So that was an evil guy. But that's how I found out that when both people don't sign the trust deed, that's a problem. And so you don't have to learn the same way. Any other deeds of trust in foreclosure? That's important to know if you're bidding at a sale. You want to know if there's a likelihood of a junior lien being interested enough to protect their interest, and you'd also like to know if you're buying or bidding on a junior lien that the first is not going to sale at the same time. At the very bottom it says this property is being purchased from either an owner or a trustee sale. The reason I have that there and I check that is there a different level of information that I need if I'm buying it directly from an owner or at a trustee sale. If I'm buying from an owner, doesn't everything that's against the property stay? Yes, because it's all recorded. But if I'm buying it at a trustee sale, and there's the date of the trust deed, let's say, is in a certain position, there's some things that I don't absolutely have to know, because they're not going to stick against the property. And so I put that there in case there's an issue of time, and that I don't really want this to be true, but if the title company rep is busy to the point where they have to do all these searches, let's say I send over 20 properties to them, and I mark that we're buying all of these at trustee sales, do they have to show to me junior liens if they don't have time? No, because those are going to be wiped out. Do they have to show state tax liens if they don't have time? No, they're going to get wiped out. I need to see IRS liens. I need to see tax bills. But there's some things that don't absolutely have to be done. So in saving time every once in a while, that's possible for the title company to realize that since I'm buying at a trustee sale, they can do a little bit. I want them to do the research, but I don't have to have the same level of information. If I'm buying it, though, from an owner, I also am going to go to escrow. So in that case, I'm going to take time to have a title policy anyway. So mostly that form is used when I am dealing directly with bidding at a trustee sale. That's what that form is for. Prior to that form, you know, I was always talking to them verbally, and it took up a lot of time, and there was misunderstandings and so forth. So this way, it's just a fax. We fill those all out in the beginning of the day, fax them all over, and they respond to it, and we know right where we are at the trustee sale. Middle of page 177. You have to know all of this information that's on that form to go to a trustee sale intelligently. You have to know everything that's on a prelim to make sure that you are safe. You want to get that information in advance, too. We're in the middle of page 177. A lot of times, the trustee sale information that you get back from the title company eliminates you from wanting to go to the trustee sale. And so it saves time. If you get that done first, it's a big time saver. So it's, again, if you have a lot of properties that are available, sometimes it's not a preference to chase ones that have problems. So if there's an IRS lien after a first trust deed, and there's another property that's just as good that is available without a trust deed, an IRS lien, maybe my preference isn't to buy the property with an IRS lien. So that's the kind of thing that you make decisions on and just say, you know, I have enough good things without the hassle that I'll just take on the simple ones. Obviously, you make sure that you know what position your trust deed is in before you make a bid on the property. And you have to know the sequence of liens that are going to stay if you're the winning bidder. We have a little contract test that we'll do in a little while to kind of go through some examples of that. Why don't we turn to that right now? As a matter of fact, take a look at page 190. On 190, there's three properties going to trustee sale, and we'll do them one at a time. They each get a little bit more complicated, and they each require a little bit more information to know. First trustee of $400,000 is going to sale. The opening bid is $401,950. The following is a complete list of the liens on the property. And I put the amount of $401,950 for the first trust deed, recorded January 3, 1996. A state tax lien of $8,000, recorded February 6th of 2000. A second trust deed of $15,800, recorded April 7, 2001. And a judgment of $50,000, recorded March 9th, 2005. The winning bidder pays $405 for the property. Okay, we've got an overbid of $3,050. Does it go to the state tax lien? Okay. Does anybody else get paid anything? Okay. The second trust deed. Now, wait a minute. The state tax lien is only getting $3,050. You've got IRS taxes, state taxes, and property taxes. This is a state tax lien. It got recorded senior to a second trust deed, and for the example, they would end up getting $3,050. The state is still owed about $5,000, right? That doesn't mean that the owner is off the hook for that money. It just means that this property is, okay? The second trustee just got wiped out. Does it have recourse? Yes, it does. It doesn't have recourse if it was conducting the sale and got less than it was owed, but it just got wiped out by an action of another lender, and it wasn't a second trust deed that was taken out simultaneously with the purchase of the property. So there is recourse. Now, whether they pursue it or not, but there is recourse. There's a judgment of $50,000. It's wiped out as far as this property is concerned. It doesn't wipe it out off of the recorded evidence as a $50,000 debt. So this can happen, and there's an example in the book where there's an IRS debt that was on a property that I bought that we ultimately discounted. The balance remaining owed by the guy that owed the lien, he still owed that money, and it was leaned against other properties. But as far as my property was concerned, the amount of money I paid allowed me to take my property and do what I wanted without the IRS lien anymore. So in this particular case, what you owe on the property, what is still owed on the property after the trustee sale? It's nothing. The first is what went to sale. Everything else was wiped out. Okay, second example. A second trustee to $50,000 is going to sale. The opening bid is $51,500. The following is a complete list of liens against the property. You got a first trustee to $175,000, second trustee to $51,500, a state tax lien of $11,000, an IRS lien of $12,000. The winning bid is $53,000. Who gets the excess $1,500? What's still owed on the property after the sale? So how many people think the excess $1,500 goes to the IRS as opposed to the state tax lien? Okay. It isn't true. It goes to the state tax lien. The superior recording date is what dictates who gets the money. So the IRS isn't more important than anybody else because of their name. They got there a little late, so they don't get paid. Now, the IRS is treated a little bit differently in that they're wiped out at the sale, but they have 120 days that they can come back and say, you know what, we would like to take that property over. They have a right to do that. We'll look at that civil code in a minute. But that IRS lien is is going to hang around for 120 days. And during that time period, you have to be careful about what you do to the property. But as far as the title goes, you've got the second going to sale, the excess $1,500, part of it goes to the state, the rest of it's still owed by the person that borrowed the money, and the IRS lien is still owed by the person, the state tax lien is still owed by the person that had the lien. The IRS lien is, if they don't take advantage of their 120-day period, it falls off against this property completely. So what's owed on this property after the trustee sale is the first. The second owns the property, but what is owed on the property, it was an overbid situation, right? Somebody bid $53,000. So that's a third party. That's what we do. So third party bidder bid $53,000. They own the property. The second got paid off. The first stays in its place. Okay? All right. Example number three. A second trustee to $10,000 going to sale. Opening bid is $11,000. The following is a complete list of the liens against the property. You got a first trustee to $250, a second of $11,000, a state tax lien of $7,000, IRS lien of $10,000, property taxes of $4,000, mechanics lien of $6,000. This is a second going to sale. The property attracts no bidders, reverts to the lender. What is still owed on the property in this case? You got a first trustee to $250. And a property tax of $4,000. And who owns the property? The second. Nobody bought it. The date that they recorded their lien is the most important thing. And so the only time that date of recording gets messed with is when you have a first trustee, let's say, subordinate their position where they decided for whatever reason to take a junior position to a new first trust deed, then they set themselves up to be able to be wiped out at a sale. So when a trustee sale is held, there was a question during the break. He thought that all of the other liens got wiped out and not paid a dime. And so that's not true. It depends in their situation where they are. If there's equity enough and the overbid is high enough, everybody can get paid. And there can even be money left over for the owner. So that's one of the things that's interesting. When we had very inflationary bids at trustee sales, is you'd have people bidding properties up at 90 cents on the dollar, and these people that were in foreclosure probably got some unbelievable size checks they had no idea was coming, because it was just the nature of the way the business was at the time. And so not only did most of the lenders get made whole, but the owners as well. Okay, let's turn to page 178. We'll just go over the actual process that you end up seeing the properties and going to the sale and some of the things that I've witnessed at those sales. One of the things that you want to do is try to be efficient, and so you try to see properties probably no more than twice a week. So Greg, my son, is out there looking at properties. He's out there looking at quite a group of properties all at the same time. He's actually door knocking on each of these doors. Any advantage that you can get at a trustee sale is smart. So if they do nothing other than open the front door and you get to see the condition of the house, that's smart. It's an advantage you have over somebody else going to the sale. If you get to meet them and just get a sense of who they are, that's an advantage, because you may end up not having a problem if you end up owning the home at the end of the trustee sale. And you may still be able to buy the home from the owner. There's no disadvantage seeing the owner at the property. It gives you a little advantage for what's going to go on at the sale. In this market, you want to make a list of houses that are for sale in the area. Comps are not enough anymore. You want to look at what your competition is. And auctions are going to start coming up, so you want to make sure you check for auction signs. Not trustee sales, but auctions that are starting to auction off miscellaneous houses that lenders own. There's a trustee sale bid sheet. We'll probably cover that in a little bit. You'll fill out to make sure that you've covered all of the expenses and know what you can bid at the sale. You don't want to go to a sale without having your maximum bid in mind. It's just like any other auction. It can kind of get emotional and you can overbid. Before you go to the sale, you're going to get cashier's checks, and you're going to call the trustee certainly in the morning and maybe even within the hour of the trustee sale, because things get canceled right up until the last minute. And you can spend a lot of time driving around to sales that are going to get canceled. Top of page 179, get your cashier's checks, determine the amount that you're going to bid at before you get to the sale. At the sale, pay attention and ask who the people are that are there. If you are the first, if you're at your first trustee sale, someone's going to approach you and ask you what you're doing there. That's almost a sure bet. Whether you're a bidder, whether you're a lender, or you're just a looky-loo, whatever, you're going to probably get questioned as to what you're there for. You learn a lot by observing other bidders. There's some people that work in pairs. They're partners. There's people that show up to every sale. There's people that work for large companies. They're not actually the real property buyer themselves. I'm cautious about answering properties regarding the property I'm going to bid on. People asking me what property, what it's worth, what did I think of what the repair bill was, on and on. I don't answer a thing, because I probably worked hard. If I have a superior knowledge at that point, I am not going to give that away to a competitive bidder in that situation. I also don't believe anything I'm told at the sale. And so you can have people say things like, "It's too bad about that house if it wasn't for the crack in the swimming pool," or whatever. "Too bad about the fire in the bedroom bat last night." I'm known as a pretty straight shooter. I went to a trustee sale once, and just sitting there, and Joe Harper was there and a few of the other regulars, and I just couldn't resist and kind of just said, "You know, that house is a pretty nice house. Too bad about the fire in the back bedroom." And man, you should have seen the reaction. These guys whipped around and went, "What?" And they were all very excited, but I did tell them I was kidding. But if you didn't see the inside of the house, isn't that something that you could have been susceptible to? And that's the one thing that's really good to, I mean, I don't do it, but if you were going to make people bid less than they were going to, if you can put an element of doubt in their mind as to their information, that's what these guys tried to do to you. So the key to being successful at a trustee sale is to be the most knowledgeable person standing there. The trustee is going to have more than one sale to conduct. They usually just read through all the cancellations first, and then there's usually a gap of time where they check on the ones that they thought were going to sale. They call back to their home base to determine if anyone declared a last-minute bankruptcy, and then they conduct all the sales. The trustee will ask you to show proof of funds. I would not show the amount of money that you're going to be qualifying for to any other bidder. I do not like to qualify first, because a lot of the trustees write down the amounts of your cashier's checks with pencil and paper, and anybody that's bidding after you can easily see what you brought. So if you are in that situation, you might bring an exorbitant amount to where there's no way they can tell what you were going to bid. Or you can also re-qualify if it gets past your bid. So you can bring a certain amount, and then you can say, if you're still interested beyond a certain dollar amount, re-qualify at that point, and probably nobody's going to be close enough to see what in fact you're qualifying for, the amount you're qualifying with. I think there's probably some cooperation between long-term trustee sale buyers and trustees. So if there's any favors as far as some kind of letting people know what other people have with them, and that may or may not go on all the time. I'm always suspicious when I go to trustee sales. It really reminds me of going to a used car lot, I have to say. So I'm cautious about that. The trustee opens the bid. The amount owed, the amount is usually the amount owed to the beneficiary, and it could be open for less than that if the beneficiary wanted to get the property sold. if it was over encumbered. If you're at the trustee sale, typically I would be overbidding the same amount every time. I'm on the bottom of page 179. I don't look at other people as they bid. I don't want to get into an ego contest. And I don't try to listen to statements like, oh, this one's going for retail today. Anything that people can do to discourage you from bidding, they will do. If the only bidder is a lender, they probably don't want the property. And if you are interested in it, I would make each bid as long into the process as you could. So the trustee sale goes on, and usually when at the end you get this going once, going twice, and then I would make a small overbid, and I would force the lender into that position over and over again until he finally just thought it was too dangerous to raise it again. I would make it very tough and very slow to go up. When you're the only bidder, now that's always exciting. The very first time I got involved in trustee sales, the neat thing about it is you get a list of properties, and they could really, some of it could be going to sale the next day. That's what happened to me. I got the first group of notices. There was a house right around the corner from where I lived in a cul-de-sac. Very good buy. I go to the sale, no one's there. That's not very comfortable. You're thinking, okay, am I missing something? And the answer most of the time is, yep, you bet. But there was a second on the property, and this was the first going to sale. And so I made a bid. Now, I was so inexperienced that the starting bid was, say, $51,000, and I went up $100. That was not necessary. I could have gone up a buck. So I cost myself $99 just because I didn't know any better. But I won the bid, and Wells Fargo had the second, and they called me the next day, and they said, were you the guy that won that trustee sale? And I said, yeah. He says, man, we forgot to protect it. I was just very happy to know that I hadn't messed up. But if you're the only one that's bidding at a trustee sale, I mean, you have a choice. You can assume that you're wrong and not bid. You can assume you're right. But if you have any doubt about your information, you shouldn't be there in the first place. Don't expect too much cooperation from other people in the business either. I don't know too many people that have friends at the level to where they would say, you know what, you are bidding on a bad property. You probably looked at the wrong address. It's not a first, it's a second. Now, I'll do that. I will. I'll definitely do that if I'm bidding with somebody, but I don't expect that courtesy in return, trust me. I've even done this on purpose. Ward, you'll like this. I wanted to see if I had any friends out there. So there was a trustee sale that was going where it was definitely a second going to trustee sale, and I qualified like I was going to bid on it. And half a dozen other guys qualified at the same time. And then when the bidding started, not one of us bid. And the trustee sale guy, he's just kind of confused because all these people qualified. So I looked at the guys that qualified with me, and they're just looking at me. I said, I just wanted to see if any of you to tell me I was making a mistake. And they all started laughing. And they said, not here, man. So I found out that I was all alone out there, and that's pretty much the way it is. Here's what happened to me on more than one occasion because of a little bit of being careless. When no one else shows up, not even the trustee, that means that the sale is not being held at the normal location, and you didn't look. So I've been standing at the San Bernardino courthouse steps waiting for a great sale, only to find out the sale location was on another street in another city. So that's completely embarrassing when that happens. Well, I finally looked at the notice. Yeah, no one else noticed except for, yeah, I didn't get the property buy. Okay. When you win the bid, the trustee will take your money. They confirm how you want to take title, and the trustee gives you a receipt. If you take a look at page 183, you'll see a copy of the receipt. After the bid, you secure the property if it's vacant. You change the locks. You get insurance right away. You record the trustee's deed as soon as you get it. They don't give you the trustee's deed when you win the bid. Now, if you want to insure title, you're not going to get title insurance when you win the bid. And I like title insurance. I am not as risk-taking as Ward. So if I win the bid, I'm going to take it in title, and I'm going to transfer that title and get a binder policy as I transfer it from who won the bid to another entity that I want to ultimately sell out of. So I get a title policy for that. Since I'm getting a binder, it's not that expensive, and I just feel better. I sleep at night. Having title policy makes me feel good. So you repair and sell it for a profit. Don't repair it until you officially own it. Three times I've had sales that I thought I won that were canceled for some reason. Bankruptcy was declared, and they didn't catch it in time. And so it would have been a mistake to fix that property before I got the official trustee's deed from the trustee. Page 181, if the owner's still in the house, meet with them and explain the situation. If they're going to receive some money from the sale, that's a good time to tell them. If you want them to leave friendly, perhaps offer them some money instead of evicting them. If the property can be videoed at that point for insurance purposes, I wouldn't mind getting an idea of what it is that I bought. And if it changes before people leave, I want to try to make sure that I have proof to the insurance company that it wasn't in bad shape when I bought it. If it's vacant, before you move the junk out that's there, I would video that. I have had a situation where I bought the property. Vacant stuff, you know, vacant property, it was all full of junk. I videotaped it, fortunately, took it to a storage place. About 30 days later, I got a certified letter letter saying that all that stuff was in good shape. The big screen TV, you know, so forth, was worth $5,000 exactly, just the amount of the small claims lawsuit. And the big screen TV was actually a black and white with a hanger as an antenna. And the couch was one that the dogs had sat on for 3 years without any hair being taken off. So that was the expensive stuff. I just sent a copy of the video to the attorney, and that was the end of that. So that's how you protect yourself. Let's take a look at the receipt that's on one page, on page 183 at the very top. It's Trustees Assistance Corporation. April 8th, 91, successful bidder. I was a successful bidder at a property. On the very bottom, it says title to be vested in, and at that point, I took property in my name, sole and separate from Marcia, so she didn't have to deal with all the paperwork that followed. Now, I expected that this property would get a fair amount of attention, and as it turned out, I was the only bidder. And I took a $110,000 cashier's check. That's all I brought. And what was the final bid? It's in the middle of the page. $80,390. So they had to send me proceeds of $29,610 back. That's not something they hand you right away. So it has to go through the process, and you get it at the same time you get your trustee's deed. If you turn the page to 184, this is the actual document that was transferred. And I don't know if you can recall, yesterday we had one where I was the lender and the grant deed or the trustee's deed that came to me said that the winning bidder at the trustee sale was the beneficiary. This time it'll say in the front and the top line, the grantee herein was not the foreclosing beneficiary. So I was the third party bidder in this case, buying this property at a trustee sale. If you take a look at page 185, you'll see the verbiage where the trustee is granting the property again to me. It's at the bottom half of the, it just starts the second half. It says, now therefore, trustee, in consideration of the premises recited and of the sum above mentioned bid, paid by grantee, the receipt whereof is hereby acknowledged, and by virtue of the authority vested in it by said deed of trust. Remember when we talked about when you borrow money, deed of trust, you transfer the right to sell to the trustee? So that's what they're talking about. So whoever borrowed money gave them that right, does by these presents grant and convey without any covenant or warranty, expressed or implied, all that certain property here in before described to Bruce W. Norris, married man, sole and separate property. So that is a trustee's deed and the verbiage that ends up getting you the property. No warranties. So it's equivalent to not a grant deed, but a quitclaim deed. On page 186, this particular property had an IRS lien against it. So I was the winning bidder at the trustee sale. There was no competition, but there was an IRS lien, and so this is what the IRS sent me. Dear sir, we understand that you purchased property identified above at a foreclosure sale. This property was subject to a federal tax lien junior to the foreclosing lien. Under Section 7425 of the Internal Revenue Code, the Internal Revenue Service has the right to redeem the property from you by paying you the amount specified in the regulations issued under that section. We are considering this action and can take it within the period that begins the date of the sale and ends 8-6-91, 120 days after the date of the sale. We may release our right of redemption before the redemption period expires if you pay an amount determined to be equal to that right. If the right of redemption is determined to be without value, you will not be required to pay to obtain the release. So the IRS now has contacted me saying that we had a lien on the property and we may consider going after the property. Now my problem with that was that I had a triplex that I had just bought. I had three tenants. I'm now the owner, and the triplex was really not in great shape. I was concerned about letting it sit there for 4 months without me doing any work to it. So I decided to see if I could motivate the IRS to take a big discount off of the lien that they had. So on page 189 is basically what we worked out in dealing with the IRS. To get them to discount, what I did is I took pictures of the property. I took the ugliest pictures that the property could produce, and actually it wasn't that hard. That's supposed to be funny, seeing you guys didn't laugh at that. I don't. What this one tenant had done was, and maybe tenants before her too, maybe this is where she got the idea, there was a stove and a kitchen sink, and there was a kitchen window. And apparently the favorite way to get rid of bacon grease was to toss it out the window, which kind of kept on forming outside that window and building up quite a residue on the side. So it made for a good picture for the IRS anyway. So the amount of the lien on page 189, if you look at it, was $15,882 against the owner of the property at the time, Stephen Dunbar, when it went to trustee sale. The last paragraph says, now therefore I, the District Director of Internal Revenue at Laguna Niguel, California, for in consideration of the sum of $3,000, the receipt of which is hereby acknowledged, do you hereby release under Bruce Norris the right to redeem granted to secretary or his delegate within the period of 120 days. So I basically paid $3,000 to get that $15,000 released from the property. It allowed me to go ahead and deal with the property, fix it up, and get it sold. So that was my preference. Now, if I had just left it alone, probably what would have occurred is the IRS wouldn't have chased it at all. I probably would have saved $3,000. I think they automatically send the notice out. I don't think they pursue very many of them. I once heard that for all of Southern California, they had basically two people that paid attention to this type of notice. So the odds of them getting around to your property probably aren't very good, but you do have to wait the 120 days. If you contact them, there's a good chance they're going to be especially interested in your property. And so they'll make the effort to go see if you have equity, and then you might end up having the IRS come after that property. So you'll have to decide whether you want to leave it alone or pay a small amount and discount what the IRS has.